Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting here today with Mandy Pierce. Mandy, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Man, I'm doing fabulous. As always, we're going to talk about one of the topics that I get asked all the time. It's, should I start a nonprofit? We're going to go through a bunch of different questions. We're going to leverage your expertise, and you're going to let everyone know that they definitely should not start a nonprofit. I mean, maybe you should start a nonprofit. We'll figure it out. But Mandy, why don't you tell us a little bit something about yourself and who you are and what you do?
Well, I own a couple of businesses. The one that we're talking about today is Funding for Good. And I've been in business, since 2009, but I've been in the nonprofit world for about 25 years. I started right in college and have been in there ever since. I've only had one for-profit job other than my for-profit businesses. And I work with nonprofits all over the country doing development work, capacity building, leadership development, strategic planning, all that sort of stuff. And we also get this question all the time. So I'm excited to sort of deconstruct it a little bit with you today.
I get so happy that people want to help and they want to do good things. I don't always believe that starting your own nonprofit is the right answer. It's definitely the right answer for a lot of people, but I don't think it's the right answer for everybody. But I think we're going to jump into this and kind of dissect the things we need to know to figure out if that's the right idea and the right move for us or not. So I like to just jump right in and start these things. Like, what are some of the things that questions you need answered before you would recommend someone start a nonprofit?
Some of the places that we start are, why do you want to start a nonprofit? And more often than not, that question eventually boils down to, because we can get grant money, which is definitely not the reason to start a nonprofit. That would be like saying, I'm going to start a for-profit business because I can take out a loan at the bank. If you don't have a sustainability plan and know where your revenue streams are coming from and know how you're going to sustain your business, that would also be a bad idea. So that's really the first conversation piece, is why do you want to start a nonprofit? And then if there happens to be a super valid idea that isn't based around grants, then we go into, have you done a needs assessment in your community to find out where the gaps are? And are you filling that gap with a service that's not duplicating the services of another nonprofit? Because people don't want to support a duplication of services unless it's providing that service in a different way, with a different program, to a different demographic, in a different region geographically. So making sure that you have vetted what's already being offered, how are you going to do it differently, and why does that need to be done, right? The need might exist, but then figuring out why are you the person that should be filling the gap is also the next important question, because you might have a great idea, but you might not have the resources to do that as well as another group or another entity. And so then we talk about partnerships and collaborations. Are there groups that already exist that are doing this work that you could help them increase their capacity and their impact? And most people are like, oh, I want to do it myself. I want to do it my own way. Which then leads us to the question that I know you're eventually going to ask. If you start a nonprofit, it's not your business. It's a community business. And if you start a community business, you have to be able to answer one of two questions. As the founder of that business, do you want to serve in a role on the board of directors and eventually rotate out of that position, because you should not serve on a board for life? There should be term limits and you should rotate off. So eventually you'd be governing, but then you'd be off. So you're not involved in that way anymore. That doesn't mean you can't volunteer. That doesn't mean you can't participate, but you're not in a governing role anymore. Or do you want to be a staff person, potentially an executive director or something, and know that the board is your boss and they can fire you? Which, of course, no founder thinks is ever going to happen, but it happens all the time. I've worked with numerous clients that has happened to. And so then you're also not involved. So if you're a staff person and the board of directors decides to take the organization in a different direction than what you had initially envisioned, you have to be okay with that, because you're a staff person and not a board person. And if you're a board person and then you rotate off, then you don't really have a say in that. So which one of those two positions do you want to be in starting your nonprofit? And a lot of people don't realize that that is sort of the question. They're like, oh, I'm starting a business. It's not a business. It's not going to be yours for life. It's a community organization that is run by the community for the community. So yes, it's a business, but it's not your business.
Yeah, you don't own it like a traditional business. I talked to someone and they're like, yeah, I'm looking to buy this nonprofit. I said, what on earth are you talking about? It'll cost you $0. And they're like, that's not how it works. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And I was like, no person owns this. There's no valuation of the nonprofit. They can't sell it for a price or, right? You can't buy someone out. And he's like, I'm pretty sure you can. I was like, I've been doing this for a while and that's just not how it works. And one of the things is that you don't own it. Like, it's not Travis's dang old nonprofit shop. I'm Travis. Nice to meet you.
And it's also not like you own the stuff at the nonprofit, which is, I literally just had this conversation with someone last month. They have the most wonderful intentions of starting this organization, and they have very specific things they want to do with it. They, as a couple, have bought, I think it's a 60 or 90 acre piece of land where they want to have this camp, these retreats, this retreat center, whatever you want to call it. And I said, well, that's awesome. But do you know that because you've bought this property, if you're building your nonprofit on it, then one of two things happens. Either you have to put the property that you're building the stuff on in the nonprofit's name, because if they don't own their property, they can't get grants to upgrade the facility, to build new stuff, to do capital campaigns, because foundations want you to own your property, whether it's the building or the land or both. Or are you going to give them the land so they can do that, and then the land isn't yours anymore? So if something happens with the nonprofit in the future, it's not yours. They wanted to build their house on the same property so they could like be involved and live close by and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, how do you feel about that? If at some point something happens and you're no longer involved because you're not a staff person or on the board, and the board decides to do something else with the property, and your house is right there, like, are you okay with that? And they were like, I didn't know that could happen. This is not a for-profit business. That's not how it works. And they're like, well, what if we wanted to close it? I was like, you'd have to donate the stuff in the organization's name to another nonprofit. That's how it works when a nonprofit closes its doors and files for a dissolution. You can't just keep the stuff. That's not how it works. And they were like, really? I'm like, yeah, really? So, you know, there's just all these misconceptions. Oh, we're going to do this thing and save money on taxes, or we're going to do this thing and get our salary paid really easily through grants, or everybody wants to support this thing. And I'm like, no, it's a lot more work than that. A whole lot more.
There's Uncle IRS who is in your pockets and in your business every step of the way. Something that we talked about in our pre-interview is everything you do as a nonprofit is 100% transparency. Everyone knows your business down to the penny of who you are, what you do, where you put your money, and how it goes. And I don't think people realize that exactly. Oh, we're going to do this thing. It's going to be wonderful. But you know, one of the questions I really like to ask people is like, well, what kind of person are you? Like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What does your financial situation look like outside of, you know, your current life? What does your life currently look like before starting this thing? Do you have the time? Do you have the resources? Do you have the connections? And people aren't really sure how to answer that. What kind of person are you?
In my experience as a consultant, working in and working for nonprofits for over a quarter of a century, it takes a lot more work, effort, resources, time to run a nonprofit than it does to run many for-profits. You have to be documenting everything. You have to make all that documentation available to the public. You have to report it to your board of directors. You have to manage boards of directors. You have to train boards of directors constantly. For those people who have ever worked in any business where there was more than one person and you had to train somebody, imagine your frustration when that person that you work with leaves and you're like, oh my God, now I have to train a new person, right? In the nonprofit world, you have to train board members usually every 3 years because some are rotating off. Some rotate off every year when you have classes and you're training them every single year. And then they're gone and you have all that institutional knowledge gone and you have to start over. That for me is exhausting because you're never at a place where you don't have to train someone, whether it's a staff person or board person. It's a lot of work. And there's never an end in sight. At least when you run a business as a for-profit, a lot of times you have the opportunity to cultivate a staff person that can stay. You have an opportunity to create a culture that they want to stay, to raise a salary, to give benefits, to to do all these things and be a great business to work in. And people do stay for life at some businesses. That's just not the case in most nonprofits. So I think that's a great question. You know, what are your resources? What is your time availability? Because most people, I'm like, I hear this from people that don't know a lot about nonprofits that want to start one after they have started it. They'll say, I just want to run the program. I just want to provide the services. I'm like, yeah, because administrative work is not the same as running your program. And they're like, I don't want to do that stuff. That's running a business. So if you don't want to do that stuff and you just want to work with clients, work with programs, perhaps volunteering with another organization might be a better choice. And I do put people in that direction all the time. I say that to people more often than not.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, who is already either serving this population that you care about, or who is already running a similar program where you can go plug in and really, the vast majority of the time, is get that feeling that you're looking for of giving back directly to this thing. A, it's much quicker. A, B, it's much easier. C, it doesn't take any admin work, really. They onboard you and there you go. And D, you don't have to deal with all the headaches of running your own nonprofit. When I ask someone like what type of person they are they the visionary? Do they get out there? Are they willing to talk to people? And when you're in the nonprofit world, you have to talk to everybody every day about all the things that you do and offer and how the impact that you're making. Or are you more of the administrative, maybe support type, where you're willing to support someone? So then maybe you're not the best lead for this type of thing, which there's nothing wrong with that. Right? For every Steve Jobs, there's a Steve Wozniak, a guy in the back doing all the work, and there's someone out front, you know, saying all the big, wonderful things. And there's nothing wrong with either type of person, but you have to know if you're going to be able to lead that level of organization, or are you more comfortable just doing some of the busy work? And you mentioned earlier that you have to constantly train your board, right? The average turnaround for employees in the nonprofit sector is 16 months. So you're constantly training employees anyway. Well, we'll just use volunteers. Fun fact, they need training as well. So you have this constantly running machine. And when you look at things, you mentioned grants earlier, like, oh yeah, we'll just get grants. Fun fact, grants are a lot like a small business loan. If you need them, you don't qualify for them. If you do qualify for them, you don't really necessarily need them. So it's not that you can go there day one, day two, apply for a grant, day three, have millions of dollars to use. That's not how it works. You haven't proven anything. You don't have a system in place. You don't have paid for employees. You don't have any of the hallmarks they look for. It's not like, oh yeah, but I heard, you know, Melinda Gates is on the prowl now and she's just giving away billions of dollars. She's not going to give it to you just because you start an organization. Well, my mission is so important. I was like, yeah, but like I'm a veteran, right? So I share the veteran space with 53,000 other organizations dedicated to veterans. So why you and not someone that's proven that they've done something? Why are we picking you? You have to know how you're different. You mentioned doing a needs assessment. I talked to a gal. She called me. She's like, I want to open some housing for women in the DC area. I said, awesome, amazing. Do the people in the DC area need housing for women? And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, you want to do something specifically. It's on your heart. That's wonderful. Is that what the people in the community need? She's like, I have no idea. Okay. So why would you start?
And that's where she lives, right?
Yeah. So why would you start an organization? You have no idea if it's needed or not. Well, how do you do a needs assessment?
You know, a lot of people that become founders of nonprofits end up wearing every hat there is to wear in the beginning because they don't have the funds to hire staff. They don't qualify, as you said, for grants because they don't haven't had a year or two or three of proven success to share their impact. They're in this place where they're fundraising, they're being an ambassador, they're public speaking, they're doing the needs assessment, they're doing every single possible thing and providing services some of the times. And a lot of times it's that, like, you just had a baby, where's the manual? How do you do this? That, you know, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And they don't realize what they haven't been able to do until they're a couple of years in. I'm like, oh, I didn't know I needed to track data for that. Oh, I didn't know I should have been keeping up with statistics for this. Oh, I had no idea I should have kept up with demographics for who I serve. Because you don't know what you don't know until someone tells you you should have known it, right? And so it really is an education in and of itself. And even sometimes when I work with for-profit business folks who are at the stage in their life where they're like, we have this money now, we want to start a nonprofit. They have never thought through that stuff, because when they were in a for-profit business, it's kind of, that structure is a little bit different. Some of the concepts are the same, but there's a different way to go about it. And a lot of times nonprofits don't have all the bells and whistles that larger for-profit companies may have initially. So people don't know what they're not doing. And then it becomes really hard 2 or 3 years in to start getting the money they might qualify for if they had done all those things in the beginning. Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. And if people had the foresight to go to their local nonprofit centers or small business centers or small business development centers and get free support and guidance on starting their businesses, for-profit or nonprofit, then they would have a leg up on, oh, I didn't know I needed to think about that thing. Oh, well, that's a really good idea. I should probably put some time into that before I just randomly start this organization. A lot of people don't know those resources exist, which is also kind of frustrating.
Well, I'm with you on that. But when I talk to people, they tell me what they want to do and they want to do these good things. We kind of talk through the things that we've already spoken about. And something that I find very frustrating is they don't spend any time learning about what it is they need to be doing, which is one of the main reasons I started this show, is to talk about all the things and all the how to do the things that people don't spend the time doing. When you deal with things like nonprofits, sometimes it's really, no kidding, life or death. And it doesn't feel like you have time to learn and train, but we already talked about the huge training cycle you need to be able to operate just on a regular basis. You know, what are you listening to? Are you listening to a podcast like, I don't know, the Nonprofit Architect podcast, and learning how to do the thing that you're trying to do? Are you doing the research you need to make sure you're going to be successful? How do you know that your services are needed, or who else is doing them in your town? I talked to someone about, you know, getting their life in order and doing this thing. And he's like, yeah, I'm really trying to, you know, I'm creating a hockey program. I'm delivering gear, hockey gear. I don't know if you know this, North Carolina, hockey gear is expensive. Like,
I think you're looking at sporting gear is expensive.
But you're just looking at like $500. You've got pads and helmet, jerseys and skates and sticks and ring time. Like $500 is like the low end of hockey. It's not like soccer. You get cleats and a ball and you're done. Maybe some shin guards and a mouth guard. But like, hockey's expensive. I was like, well, what does the rest of your life look like right now? He's like, well, I'm working 3 jobs, none of them paying more than $9 an hour. And I'm living with my sister and I'm sharing the bunk bed with my nephew. I was like, hey, brother. I know that you want to do good things, but right now you're not in a place where you can give to these nonprofit services. Your personal life is not in order. You don't have the bandwidth, time, energy, or focus to really make an impact on what you want to do because of these other things. Talk to a gal in Vegas doing the same thing after the Vegas shooting, creating an organization that dedicates to that. And I was like, well, what do you do for your job? Like, how does your finances look? She drives part-time for Uber. And I was like, you don't have the stability you need to take on the enormity that it is to start a nonprofit. You're immediately in over your head. You don't know the things that you don't know, the things that are going to bite you. You don't have the resources to take care of yourself, let alone to take care of other people. And I don't want to discourage people from helping, but starting an organization takes so much time, energy, effort, and relationships to make these things work. And if you don't have your own life in order, what are the chances you're going to be able to provide quality services for the long term?
You hit on something earlier when you said the turnover in nonprofit staffing is about every 16 months. We do a lot of helping folks find their next development director, their first development director, whatever. And the average staffing time for a development director is 14 to 16 months. And a lot of people think that a development person is going to come in and be a miracle worker in the first 3 months. And I'm like, it takes a full year. Even if I came in as a professional development director for 25 years, if I came in to work with you, I would have to get to know your systems, your database, your staff, your current donors, your prospective donors, the campaigns you've had, the campaigns you want to have, what your needs lists are, what your strategic plan looks like. I would have to get to know your community partners and build relationships with your board of directors. Like, it's a ton of work. And yeah, I might be able to bring some dollars in through grants just because I can grant write, but all the other types of funding streams you have, you're talking a year before you start seeing measurable results from a development staff that knows what they're doing. Other development staff that might just be like a year in, they're going to need training. So if they're there for 14 to 16 months, you have 4 to 6 months of productivity after they've actually started doing well, and then you have to train a new one. So people don't take the time, like you said, to educate themselves on that stuff and realize, what do I need to have in place? How hard is it going to be to get that thing and keep it? For-profit world, virtual assistants. For those of you in the world that have ever had a virtual assistant, you get this amazing person or team or company to help you and learn all about how you work, how your company works, how your website works, what tasks you need them to do and when, and you get them all trained up. And things start moving real smooth. And you're like, oh my God, this is such a relief. I've got all these things off my plate. And then they're like, we're not going to have our business anymore. What? Oh my God. And then you're starting from scratch and you have to train new people and get to know them. And you have to get to know their personalities and their teams. And this happened to me 3 times in the course of 18 months. I thought I was going to shoot myself. And so, you know, as a business person, it doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. You have to understand there are things like that that happen that are out of your control, that you have to have the bandwidth to deal with if you want your business to continue running. Because I think I said this to you in our pre-interview, nonprofit's your tax status, but it should not be your business model. You can make money and it is okay, right? You don't have shares. People aren't purchasing shares to make money off of you, but you can make money and have it in your bank account from year to year and be, what is the word I'm looking for? Financially stable. And that's okay.
You need to. It's not that it's okay. It's a requirement. Because if you don't, if you're looking to start something and you're not sure how to fund it, and you're not sure about all these things and whatever, right? You can learn as you go. But the number one focus, in my opinion, is creating sustainability. Are you looking to only do services for 18 months? Because if you don't create these revenue streams and create a sustainable model, then 18 months is about all you get from burnout. I've got a friend of mine, great guy, love him to death. He's running an organization here in Oklahoma City. And he came to me, he's like, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. He's like, I think I got to shut it down. I was like, I agree. Absolutely. I was like, your focus is here, here, and here. And there's no way you can keep all these plates spinning at the same time. Absolutely. And he shut it down. And then about 6 months later, he calls me. He's like, hey, I'm thinking I'm starting it back up. I was like, okay, fabulous. Why did you shut it down in the first place? He's like, I was tired, wore out. The money wasn't there to keep it going. And, you know, wasn't able to divide myself like this. I was like, cool. So what are you doing, planning to do differently so you can get this thing up and sustainable and not cause you all the stress? He's like, what do you mean? I was like, if you're telling me right now, as a buddy, you want to start the same thing and do it the same way, you are just telling me that, you know, 12 to 18 months from now, you're going to close your doors again because you didn't do anything differently. You're going to run it the same way, do the same type of things, not make it sustainable just like before, not raise the money just like before. And you're going to be in the same place you were 6 months ago when you called me and you told me you're going to shut your doors. And he was shocked that I would say this to him. I was like, are we friends? He's like, yeah. I was like, as a friend, I expect that you are going to hold me accountable and I'm going to hold you accountable. And I love your vision. I love your passion. And I love the things that you did. But there's some big gaps here, brother, in what it is that you're trying to do. And if they're not addressed, you haven't created something new. You've just took back on an old problem and wonder why it's going to hurt you later. And I'm not okay with that for your life. I don't know if he felt the love in this statement or not. I don't think he started it back up again yet. But those are things that really matter. Are you able to sustain this thing? I talked to a guy, he does plumbing 60 hours a week so he can afford to take veterans hunting and camping for the weekends. And in the fall, when you get into those hunting campies, he's working 60 hours and then he's basically working 80 hours on the nonprofit. So 140 of his 168 hours is spent actively doing things to either bring in money or to deliver services. And I was like, are you setting up other revenue streams? And we're going to get into that here in a second. And he's like, no. I was like, well, how long are you going to be able to do this? He's like, well, I haven't had any problems so far. I was like, how long have you been doing? He's like, 4 months. I was like, so you're just getting into it? He's like, yeah. I was like, let me know when you're ready to shut your doors. And he's like, I don't like to be talked to that way. I was like, well, I don't like someone telling the community that they're going to provide these programs. And because they're not sustainable, then in less than 2 years, they're going to say, hey, we can't do this anymore. Sorry about all these programs that have to go away because I didn't do the back-end diligence to make this thing sustainable.
And that's the thing a lot of people don't understand. You always hear about organizations that do what I like to call crisis campaigns, where they're like, oh my gosh, if we don't raise $3,000 in 3 days, we're going to have to close our doors. Nobody wants to give money to that, people. Please. Nobody wants to help you keep your doors open for 3 days. Because then what's your sustainability plan to keep it open for the next month? Obviously, there isn't one. Foundations certainly don't want to do that because there's no return on their investment. There is no security in their giving. And today, foundations and donors are much more savvy than they used to be. They want to know what the return on investment is for their dollars. They want to know, what impact are you having with our dollars? So, you know, if you feel like you're going to be crisis fundraising all the time just to keep your doors open, that's a conversation. I helped an organization here get started with some friends of mine who wanted to start a very specific type of nonprofit. And they are one of the groups that I worked with. I was their board chair for 3 years. And then they decided to close their doors because they were a nonprofit and the owners decided, we just really want to do programming. We don't like all this other admin stuff. We don't like collecting fees. We don't like asking for money. We don't like writing grants. We don't like grants management. We don't want impact reporting. We don't want to have to like do all this stuff. We just want to provide this service that we are passionate about. And I was like, yeah, you don't need to have a nonprofit to do that. You can go work in a for-profit doing the exact same thing that you're doing right now and not have to manage any of that. And that's exactly what they did. They moved to Colorado. They both went to work in the things that they loved for other people. And they've never thought twice about starting a nonprofit again. And I'm glad for them and I'm happy for them. And they are both so much happier.
Yeah. Find a way to provide that value and the impact that you want to do with the appropriate amount of headache that you're willing to take on. I talked to someone in the counseling space and he's like, I want to open a nonprofit because I want to be able to have write-offs for this, that, and the other to help this certain group of people. And I was like, well, you can do all of that without starting your own organization. He's like, what do you mean? Who is helping this person, this type of person right now? Oh, I can think of a lot. This organization, this organization, this organization. It's like, perfect. Say that you'll have, I don't know, 2 to 5 hours a week that you are going to donate your time. You write them a bill as a tax write-off. They give you an in-kind donation receipt and you get the tax advantage you want. You get to help the people that you want and you didn't have to start your own organization to do it. He's like, I can do that? Yeah, man, you can. And it's going to be wonderful and you're going to love it. He's been doing it for 6 years now. Can hardly believe that he gets to do exactly what he wants to do, gets a tax write-off and didn't have to start an organization. He is so happy and thankful that he's able to do that. And I'm so happy for him.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just, I just wish people could, and I know that a lot of people want to start nonprofits because they've had a dramatic event in their life, maybe a traumatic event in their life, and they feel like they have to give back in some way. They've had a serious illness in their family or a disease. Something has affected someone they care about that they lost. Someone had a tragic accident. Someone went to war. There's all kinds of things that occur in people's lives that they're like, oh, I want to be passionate about that thing now, right?
Wonderful.
I just wish, yeah, and it is, but I just wish people would take a moment to get through their grief and realize there are so many other ways for you to get involved. There are so many organizations that probably have some type of connection to what you're doing. Maybe you add to that, right? Maybe they're not doing the exact same thing that you want to do the way you want to do it, but partnering with them would cause a greater impact. They may already have resources established. They may be willing to write grants to help you do the thing you want to do. But a lot of times what I see is people come fresh out of their experience without having taken time to process it fully. And they want to do this thing which makes them feel better and which they feel like is helping other people. But then, like you said, in the long run, a lot of times those organizations don't thrive. They don't really reach the number of people they want to or could reach if they partnered with someone else. And then they're disappointed. And it's a hard thing because you can't really have that conversation when someone's in the middle of grief. They don't hear you well. And they're also not doing a lot of research at that point in time that would lead them to things that would not agree with what they want to do. You know, like sometimes you're only doing research to get the research that supports your point of view. I'm guilty of that sometimes.
Our old and a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
I said right here, 5 articles that say I'm right. you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I say that to my husband sometimes. I'm like, baby, I've given you all the statistics, but it all supports my point of view. So I would encourage you to go out and do your own research so you can make an informed decision. Cause I'm just telling you what I want you to hear, you know, like, I totally do that. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a fine line. So whenever people call and say, should I start a nonprofit? We actually have a blog on our website, what you need to know before you consider starting a nonprofit. There's pros, there's cons. I just encourage people to know it's a lot of work. And I don't say that lightly. I own three businesses. You couldn't pay me enough to start a nonprofit. I've been in the nonprofit world my entire career. There is not enough money out there for you to say, we want you to start and run a nonprofit. No, thank you. I'll stick with my for-profit businesses all day. I'm happy to help you with your nonprofit, but I don't want to own one myself. I also don't want to have 12 bosses.
Oh, well, you don't want more bosses, Bob? Yeah, I just think back to Office Space. You're like, I've got 9 bosses. Like, how can I possibly? Did you get the cover sheet on your TPS reports? Oh, did you hear that we're doing TPS reports in different ways? And in the nonprofit world, it's the same. Because there is just so many things, so many bosses, so many regulations, so many ways of doing things. And people start off and they want to do it the same way that the American Red Cross is doing it. You can't start the way they're doing it. It's like starting a baseball team and expecting to operate like the Yankees. If you've got the Yankees money, you can maybe do that. But if you don't, you have to figure out a different way to do that. They talk about this in Moneyball. And they found a different way to find ways to win that didn't cost so much. The same way with starting a nonprofit. It's going to be a decade before you can operate the way the Red Cross does with the donor engagements and writing the major grants and doing all these things. You can't start at that level. No one can. There's nothing wrong with that, but you have to do different things and different tactics. And one of the things you have to do is you have to find different streams of revenue. You have to bring it in from t-shirt sales and different types of partnerships, and you have to be able to work with organizations that are going to fund you every month on the back end automatically, so you can put them on autopilot, send them a thank you card every month or a call to catch up, but you know that money is there and then you got to put your efforts somewhere else. So what are the different kinds of revenue streams that you like to recommend people get involved with?
So the first thing we really talk to folks about is, you know, you have to have a board of directors before you can really do a lot with your nonprofit. And to your sports analogy, we talk about, you know, if you recruit intramurals, then you can't play like the pros. So you need to recruit the people to support your organization in any role, whether it's a staff person or board person or volunteer, and have those expectations of, we're going to have a professional team, right? Because you can't recruit someone as an intramural and then all of a sudden have these crazy expectations. They're going to be like, that's not what I signed up for. And they're not going to perform like that. So that's the first thing, is starting with whatever teams you're working with and making sure you're recruiting the right people. Once you get that, then you need a business plan. That's the first step. Before you even have funding streams, you have to say, where are we going? How are we going to get there? And create the plan that your staff and board agree upon. Because if you don't have buy-in from both groups, then it's not going to be successful. And so in the nonprofit world, we call that a strategic plan. For those of you that have been in the business world your whole life, it's the same thing as a business plan, right? It's just, what are our goals? Let's just talk 3 years out. Where do we want to see ourselves in 3 years? And how are we going to get there? Once you have that plan, then we create a development plan for fundraising, a donors plan, and a marketing plan. And all that stuff aligns with the strategic plan, right? The strategic plan says we're going to be here in a year. And in order to do that, we need to have this much money. How are we going to raise that money? Now let's talk about funding streams. What do we have the resources to put in place? Do we have 50 really committed volunteers? Can we do a 5K road race? No, we only have 4 volunteers. So that's not an option for us. Can we do direct mail? Well, we have 3 people on our mailing list and we don't have any money to purchase a mailing list. So that's probably not an option. We have social media. Great. Let's participate in Giving Tuesday. Let's do some fundraisers on Facebook, whatever you're going to do. We are going to have a signature event, but we don't know what it's going to be yet. So we have to develop that. There's a bazillion types of funding streams: grants, churches, individuals, businesses, corporations. You might have monthly donor giving program or membership model. You might sell merchandise. You might create a social enterprise. For those of you that are like, what is a social enterprise? Think of the Habitat Restore. So they have a store that sells things for a profit. The revenue that is considered profit from that is their net goes to offset the cost of running the nonprofit wing, right? So they have a social enterprise. Sometimes you'll see companies that do like re-entry programs. They might have a pressure washing business or a lawn mowing business or a moving company. So the individuals that are in the program are working for money and they're making money. And then that all goes back to support them and the program. Again, it's a different type of social enterprise. There's lots of different models for that. You might have earned income. Maybe you have some investments and someone on your board is helping manage those investments. Maybe you have an endowment. If you're new, you probably don't. But if you're older and more established and plan on being around in perpetuity, maybe that you do. And you're drawing down from some of those investments. There's a ton of different ways to raise money. Maybe you're on Amazon Smile and you have a whole bunch of people buying stuff and you're getting little bits of money here and there from that. There's just a lot of different revenue streams and you have to sit down and say, what are our goals for revenue? And maybe you have program fees, service fees. Don't give it all away. I promise people value things more when they have to pay something for them. You'll even hear that from clients. They'll come be like, I really want to pay something. I want to feel like I can contribute something to you. Whereas most people in nonprofits are like, well, they can't afford it. They just need it for free. Really, they don't need it for free. Most of the time, they want to feel like they're contributing in some way, and you need them to contribute in some way. I'm not a fan of the charity model of giving everything away all the time.
Absolutely. You brought up a couple of good points there that I want to talk about. You mentioned drafting in the intramurals and expecting them to play like the pros. My buddy JC Carbonell runs 100 for the 22. Amazing, amazing fundraising strategy. They go out and they play 100 holes of golf in one day. They do this marathon. Oh, yeah. Wow. They walk. It's nuts. And they help raise money. This year, they're partnering with Tunnels and Towers, the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. I'm looking at the Tunnels and Tower board of directors, and I'm not going to name names, but I am going to name titles here. CEO Scout Marketing, COO and CFO of South Point Capital Advisors, LP. U.S. Army Colonel, retired CPO for CCA Global Partners. These are CEOs, CFOs, COOs, retired individuals that are playing at the highest levels in their organization that are contributing to the board of Tunnels to Towers. They've got, looks like, 26 board members, plus an advisory board, plus the executive level board. These are people that were drafted from the majors to participate in this thing. They're not playing small. They're playing for keeps and they're playing for real. You also mentioned participating and being part of the solution. You mentioned the membership model. I talked to a guy. He's like, yeah, I can't make them pay. I'm like, yeah, you can. People do it all the time. Like, oh, it says that my bylaws. Fun fact, you can vote to change your bylaws.
And you should review them every year anyway, people.
Yeah. Do we like it? Do we not like it? Is this hurting us? Is this helping us? What is it? I did an interview with Nick Valentine, CEO of Operation Phantom Support down in Killeen, Texas, right outside of Fort Hood. They run a food pantry. Everyone that participates pays $20 a month. And people are like, well, you can't do that, like you mentioned. You can, and he does. And the wonderful thing about it is, as people are standing in line waiting for food, there's no shame because you know your $20 is supporting that family in front of you and behind you. And you know that their $20 is supporting you. You guys are in it together. And it's wonderful and it's magical and it's such a great place in all the things that they're doing. So I love that. If you haven't heard that episode, jump back. Check out my interview with Nick Valentine. And then you talked about free. My goodness, my goodness. People stop asking me for my services for free. I've got a free podcast. I've got a free group. If you want to talk to me, it's going to cost money because it is my business. And you running around hat in hand, panhandling and telling your sad story doesn't bring in any dollars. It'll bring in a couple, but it doesn't bring in the real money. The real money is in that abundance, that story of amazing transformation and the impact you're making, not the tin cup. Get rid of the tin cup. Get rid of the sad sack. Tell the amazing stories of victory and you will have money coming down from the skies from you. Please, please, please stop expecting things for free because that mindset will have you closing your doors in 2 years.
And the great thing is when you do share your impact and you share how someone can get involved in that, people will choose to donate to you even when you don't ask, right? So I do get very tired of the shoestring budget. Everything has to come for free. If you can't donate it, blah, blah, blah. I also get tired of the, we're going to give you so much exposure. Exposure doesn't pay the bills, people. I appreciate that. And that's a great concept. But if I said to you, I want you to bring your whole staff and come volunteer with me for a day at this great thing, and it's going to give you exposure, would you be like, yeah, that's a great use of my resources and my volunteers for the day? Probably not. So flip that story around before you offer it to someone else. I do believe that people will donate things to you and you will get things for free. But for example, as a for-profit, I just had this conversation with my accountant like 3 weeks ago. I had an organization that we donated our strategic planning services to because one of my team serves on their board. And we agreed as a team, we were going to do that. Great. No problem. I don't do it all the time, but sure, I'm happy to do that. It's a $10,500 price tag. So I called my accountant and I'm like, hey, I have people paying me regularly for this. Obviously, you see that in my accounts. If the organization gives me a letter of donation saying that I've donated the service to them, I can use that, right? And she's like, nope. And she sent me the information that says, unless it is a tangible product that they received, you cannot write it off as a business owner. And I was like, well, they get the strategic plan, which is tangible. She's like, did the strategic plan tangibly cost $10,500 or was the paper cheaper than that? And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So like, I can't donate my services and get a write-off for that, right? So you do have to educate yourselves on what can a business write off? If they're giving you a product, if they're giving you space that has a dollar value, if they're giving you staff time that they're already paying for, some of those things are, but sometimes their actual services are not a write-off for them. So you kind of need to learn a little bit about that before you start asking people to donate stuff for you for free. But yeah, I think a lot of times nonprofits just feel like we exist for people to give to for free. Like that's why we're here. And it's just not. And they're like, well, we're not a YMCA or we're not, like you said, the Red Cross or UNICEF or whomever. Yeah, well, they didn't start that way. They didn't start as big as they are. It took a long time for them to get there.
Yeah, it took decades. It took generations of building to make those organizations as big as they are. I think the YMCA started like in the 1910s or 1920s or I don't know. Someone's going to Google this and be like, Travis, you're wrong. I'm okay with being wrong. It's whatever. They've been around for like 100 years. They didn't start that big.
And they have a membership model. And they still fundraise.
KFC started in the Great Depression in the late 1920s or 1930s. It doesn't matter where you start, but you got to be able to start to get this thing moving and get this thing growing. One of the biggest things that we haven't talked about yet really is your differentiator. What makes you different? And I've said a long time that I wouldn't get involved with veteran nonprofits like you wouldn't get involved in starting a nonprofit because how are they different? There's 53,000 veteran related organizations out there. And they're like, well, they care about the mission. Fun fact, there's 53,000 other of you with the same mission. Your mission is not your differentiator. Never has been, never will be. It's how you're making the impact, how you actually show up in the community and the world that is your differentiator. So if you are rehabilitating veterans through skydiving or extreme sports, fun fact, there's 1,000 other people doing the exact same thing. Why is yours different? What about what it is that you do makes you different? And how is that your thing that gets people to pick you over someone else?
I think that especially when I teach grant writing workshops, there's two questions that we ask people to consider. One is, how are you and your organization, your program, or your project uniquely positioned? And one, how is your program, project, or organization extraordinary? Extraordinary really lends itself to quantitative data. So things that can be measured, data, statistics, numbers, stuff like that. And you have to know some of that. How are you performing better? How are you providing services that result in better statistics than other organizations doing similar work at a local, state, or national level, right? You need to know that information. If you don't know that because you're new, it helps if you are using an evidence-based model for your program, because then you can use the results of other similar organizations using that model and say, this is what we're hoping to achieve. If you don't have that type of model, it's going to be more difficult for you to share what your impact might be going forward. Then the other question is, how are you uniquely positioned? Which we've talked about. if you don't know how you're uniquely positioned, it's going to be very hard for you to explain that to a potential donor, a volunteer, someone who wants to serve on your board. And unique positioning is, there's two hospitals in our community. One has an open MRI machine, one has a traditional MRI machine. Great, they both have MRI machines, but this one is uniquely positioned because they have an open MRI, right? Same two hospitals, they both have emergency departments, they both have bilingual staff, but one of them has bilingual staff on third shift and weekends, the other has bilingual staff 24/7. That's how they're uniquely positioned. They can serve that community at any point in time when they walk in the door, right? So you might have a lot of similarities to other organizations. You have to know how you're different. And if you're not, that is a problem for your, you can call it marketing or whatever you want to call it, but getting people out there to decide you're the person we want to give to. I tell people it's like writing a college essay for a scholarship. Everybody graduated high school. Everybody competing has a great GPA. Everybody competing had public service in some way or volunteered as a high school kid. How are you different? What makes you the one I should give this money to? Because you all have a lot of similar things in common. That's what grant writing is. That's what getting donors and engagement in the community is all about, is telling people this is how we're different. And that's very important. If you can't answer those questions, you need to sit down and have that conversation before you decide to move forward.
Having an all-volunteer staff does not make you different.
And it's not something that you should be proud of.
It makes you less desirable. And I told this to someone and they're like, what do you mean? If I'm a donor and I want to give you $50,000 and I like you, but you're a volunteer, what's to say that you don't leave next week and my $50,000 goes to a bunch of people that I don't like or care for? Or what if you leave and 20 people go with you? Now the organization is defunct and my $50,000 had no impact and you guys are going to decide to give it to someone that I don't care about. Having that sustainability, that paid staff matters. Just like we talked about intramurals and pros, you're not going to bring in the NFL. I know I've said this on multiple episodes. You're not going to bring in a 42-year-old running back and hope that you're going to win the Super Bowl, right? You're going to get that new stud early to mid-20s that's going to churn for you, and you're going to pay top dollar for that. Just like bringing in a development director. You might have one that you're going to bring in as a startup. That person, their strategies, their experience is not going to bring you to, they might bring you to $1 million a year, but that same person is not going to bring you to $10 million a year because you have to pay the person that's going to bring you $10 million a year. You're going to have to pay them more. You're going to have to pay for that level of success. Mandy mentioned that she's, the strategic planning for $10,500. You guys might be like, that's an insane price. Well, what can we get for $1,500 from some other organization? You might get a strategic plan, but it's not going to be a Mandy quality plan. And I'm sure there's someone out there that charges $50,000 for a strategic plan. Mandy's plan might get you far, but it may or may not get you as far as that $50,000 plan is going to get you. You have to understand that spending money on quality things, and I'm not trying to downplay Mandy services at all, but that's not what I'm trying to say. But you have to spend quality money to get quality people. That's just the way the world works. You might find a diamond in the rough and find the next Steve Jobs, but how often is that going to happen?
And how long are they going to stay?
If you can't pay them, they're not going to stay very long at all.
And that's the other thing. I won't go off on this for just a second. A lot of times I hear when we help folks interview for positions, I actually had a client say this to me once years ago. And it was just such a traditional nonprofit way of thinking that I feel like should change, should not even be around anymore. The executive director decided when they started that they were going to take this huge pay cut. Like, I don't need that much money. I'm going to do this for half of that, right? That's your choice as an executive director, well, whoever, that's your choice. You should not gauge what other people in your organization should get paid based on the fact that you want to volunteer your time to do your job. So when I was helping them find a development director, they wanted to hire the person that one of the people that made it to the final round of interviews. The reason they wanted to hire them was not because of their experience and not because they could do the job, but because they had a passion for the organization. I was like, oh my God, like facepalm, are you serious? I just don't understand. I don't understand nonprofits in the way they think. No for-profit company would hire someone based on they have a passion for the work we do with no experience. Like, I don't know anybody that would really say, Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But nonprofits do it all the time. I have this conversation with people on a regular, and I'm like, if you choose to do that, you just have to go into it knowing you're going to be paying extra money above and beyond their salary to have them trained because they don't know what they're doing. Are you cool with that? Well, yeah, I mean, they just have a passion. I know they can learn it. Okay. I mean, that's, you can't have a conversation after that.
Passion is not capacity to learn or perform.
No, it is not, especially when it's something that does require some type of skill. You cannot teach people public relations. People that do not have the personality to interact with other people, it is not a skill set that you can say, this is what you need to get read, and then you're going to learn how to do it and be good. I worked with a development director for 4 years, and bless, they just did not have the skill sets to do it. They never got it. They were never comfortable. They were never successful. They are still in the same position. Blows my mind.
Yep. You brought up marketing a little bit ago, and I cannot tell you the number of organizations that I talk to that have no dollars allocated to marketing. They don't even have the Google ad grant, which is 10 grand a month that Google gives you in ads. They don't give you 10 grand, right? Go listen to my interview with Preston Cohen and find out how to get utilized and maximize the Google ad grant, but they haven't even considered it. Like, well, we have the best program. If you build it, they will come. That is not true. Coca-Cola is a worldwide brand that spends billions of dollars in marketing, and everyone already knows who they are. No one knows who the heck you are, and you've got $0 allocated to it. How well do you think that's going to go for you? Do you go to Rotary Club and Chamber of Commerce and go speak at the high school every day of the week? You don't. Well, man, how on earth are people going to figure out who you are and what you're doing?
I had a client, previous client, say to me once, I said to them, I've been a donor for 5 years, maybe at that point, given the same amount every single year, because that's what they asked me for every single year. And I was like, you know, if you asked me, at the end, I was given $400, whatever. If you asked me for $1,000 and told me what you needed it for, I'd give you $1,000. I literally said that to the executive director. And that year came, they had their big signature event. They gave me a pledge card, didn't ask me for a particular amount of money. It was that whole whatever God lays on your heart business. So I was like, okay, $400. The next year, I said the same thing. Hey, so I remember mentioning last year, if you ask me for $1,000, I'll give you $1,000. Just tell me what you need it for. And they didn't ask me again. So I gave them another $400. And then at the end of the year, after I had made my gift, I said, can I just ask a question? I'm just curious. If I have point blankedly told you twice to ask me for a particular amount of money, and you haven't asked me for it, can I ask you why? Do you not need the money? I'm just curious. Well, we know that you know what the programming is. And if you want to give more and you feel led to, then you will. Okay.
You just offered 2.5 times your normal gift and no one said that would be great.
And I was like, all righty then. If you take that, if you take that thought with every donor you have and you never ask them to give more, the number one reason people don't give is because they're not asked. The number one reason people stop giving is because they're asked too much. So there is a fine line between it, but you do have to make the ask, right? You can't just assume, well, they know we're here and they know what we do. So if they want to give, they will. That's not how it works. Having some marketing and sharing your impact and saying what it is you need the dollars for and getting out in front of the community to be able to share that message in a lot of different ways. Having a development budget, having a marketing budget, and knowing what those dollars are going to be spent for. Like, I talk to people all the time that they're like, what do you mean development dollars? I'm like, do you take donors to coffee or send them thank you notes? Or like, what do you do for donor development? Do you not have any dollars allocated for that? Well, no, we've never done that before. Okay, let's talk about that. You know, there's a lot of things, but again, it's one of those, if you don't know, you don't know it. Someone has to share it with you, which is great that you have this podcast because hopefully there's tons and tons of topics people are learning, even just little tidbits about, maybe like, oh, let me go look up donor relations, or oh, let me get marketing plan, or let me go talk about strategic planning. And they may have never heard it before.
I've got people that they have my show on in their nonprofit office every day.
Nice.
Yes. Turn it on. Let your staff hear. If you don't have time to train them, at least fill the airwaves with my sweet, soothing voice and these great ideas of how to do things differently, because you might not take the exact thing that Mandy's talking about or the exact thing that I'm talking about, but it might spark the idea to do something similar, or like, ooh, I wonder if we could apply that to this. And that's where you start growing. And that's where you start getting more dollars in. And that's where more people figure out who you are. Maybe you want to start your own podcast where you talk about your specific cause. So instead of you going to donors, donors are finding it and they're coming to you. Imagine a world where they come to you because they hear you talking about what it is that you do, your passion for it, how you're making an impact, and they just come right to your door instead of you going to their door. Oh, it's mind-blowing, Mandy. Mind-blowing stuff we're talking about here.
There's just so many great resources. And to your point earlier about free resources, you know, folks like you that have a podcast and you're sharing blogs and you're sharing other people's podcasts and you have all these wonderful resources. Those are the free things we're sharing, but people need to understand those things take resources from us. It's not free for us to create that content. It's free for you to listen to it, right? So then people get to you and they're like, oh, but I want to work with you, but I can't afford you. Why can't you give me that for free? Okay, look, I've given you tons of resources for free. Just like you, we have a YouTube channel. We have blogs that we take time to write and create content and do research for. We have webinars. We do free webinars. We do paid webinars. We have templates on our website. A lot of them are free to download. Some of them are paid. But like every resource that a for-profit business creates for you cannot be free. That is not how for-profit businesses stay income. Like, we can't create the free stuff if we don't have other people paying us. Do you know what
it's
I mean?
It's a no-profit business and a business that shuts its doors.
So it's just always be considerate of what you're asking other people to provide for you for free.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is an on-fire conversation, Mandy. We have talked about, you know, should I start a nonprofit? What type of person are you? Can I start with grants right away? What are different revenue streams? What do you mean I need more than one revenue stream? How am I different than others? Am I 100% transparent? Do I know that I don't own the nonprofit, that I have to always train my board of directors and my staff and my volunteers? And should I ask for things for free? Fantastic content. What is coming up in your world? What do you guys have on the horizon that you guys are doing or developing?
We actually are launching at the end of September our 2022 Leadership Development Series. It is a webinar series that's all about leading with intent. And so it'll be a 12-part series that starts in January. And that's our big focus for the next, the last quarter of 2021 is promoting that.
That is phenomenal, Mandy. I love all the great work that you are all doing, paid and unpaid alike. Where can people find you? What's the best place for them to get hold of you?
Fundingforgood.org. And there are tons of places on there for you to request a phone call, for you to schedule an on-demand consultation, for you to get in touch with us via email. What you will not find is my phone number. So, you know, that if you want to reach out to us, start with one of the forms on our website. There are numerous ways for you to reach us. I don't have the capacity to field phone calls from thousands of people a week. So, and we don't have a phone service. When I do answer the phone, I want people to hear my voice and talk to me. So there are ways to schedule calls there. But, you know, take a look around. There's a lot of free resources, like we said, but there's also a lot of content about the impact work that we do, from strategic planning to grant consulting and templates and finding your next development director and program design. We do a lot of that. But I would encourage you to take time to look on the website before you schedule any calls.
Absolutely. You check out Mandy Pierce and her services at fundingforgood.org. Thank you so much, Mandy, for being my guest today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.